everyone, and welcome to Another Bite, where we rewatch the most innovative and intriguing pitches from Shark Tank. I'm Jory, and I'm joined by the amazing, the adaptable, and the accomplished Ariel.
How's it going?
Why did the teddy bear say no to the ice cream? Because he was beyond stuffed. I have a very good sense of humor. Today's product is all about stuffed animals. More importantly, talking stuffed animals, because that's not creepy or how horror movies start at all. Will these founders win over the heart of the sharks? Bear with me. We'll get into it after this break. Much like the age-old question, to skinny jean or to not skinny jean, marketing strategies can come and go and come back again. Who can keep up? Luckily, there's HubSpot's 2024 State of Marketing Report. It's the all-in-one guide for what's happening this year and how marketers can best approach it all. The report covers everything from increasing awareness and engagement to ensuring privacy, boosting efficiency, and growth. Don't get caught behind the trends. Visit HubSpot.com/state-of-marketing to get your free copy of the report. Today in the tank, we have Mama Sing My Song. And Mama Sing My Song is brought to us from founders Amanda, Valerie, and Danny. And they are asking for $125,000 for 10% in their business, which is a $1,250,000 valuation. Did it all in one breath. Look at me go. So Mama Sing My Song is a product. They are offering to write custom songs for kids. And then these songs, with a fun add-on, can be played out of a stuffed animal. So the songs are written by humans, they're sung by humans, and it's based on any of the personal information that is provided by the parent or the care provider. They're working with over 20 artists to keep these songs human and kind. So thinking about our product, our pitch, and our founders, our lovely stuffed animal playthings. Ariel, what are your initial thoughts?
I loved the fact that there is this charitable component of providing the stuffed animal add-on and songs for children
for
within like the foster care system. I do think that is a strong, compelling point. I don't think it's necessarily the main point to kind of redeem some of the other challenges that come with this product and this model. I think there is a lot of opportunity for them to cut back on cost. I know they're very focused on an artist-led, human-led type notion, but I actually think with like AI, they could still have the human-based element, but also cut back a little bit. It's kind of slimy for me to say that, but cut back on some of that overhead, because they say like artists right now get 30 to 50% of orders, which again, if you're thinking about it from a capitalist mindset, that's a very easy area to kind of cut back a little bit without reinvesting everything into like the charitable good or reimbursing artists. I don't know. There's a lot of other custom song services. There's teddy bears that you can press that have recordings like Build-A-Bear. So I guess my struggle with this, Jory, is this something that should just be franchised to an existing plushie
like
or bear? What actually is like the uniqueness of this product?
That's fair. So your issue is mostly like the defensibility of this being a stuffed animal, which is a big market, providing a value that is also not new to that market.
Right.
I don't have an answer for you, but what I will tell you is these animals are uncanny. I am not the consumer for this because I think anytime a human voice comes out of an inanimate object, that's concerning.
That's how all good horror movies start.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, Mama, sing my song. Don't kill me. Yeah. So that's fine. I was very curious. So you mentioned something about AI, as it seems that the founders were hesitant to use AI in the songwriting process, but they were kind of curious about using it on like the back end. I want to drill into your opinion of this being actually like a net positive for a business like this, because I think there's a lot of anxiety in the market about the potential of generative AI and using it in your marketing. Mm-hmm. I think that some marketers are really worried that this is going to replace our jobs.
Right.
Where do you see that balance between using AI and automation to make your process more efficient, but then balancing that with something like a creative career such as marketing?
I think it's to automate and streamline the steps that may be a little bit more time consuming. So like leveraging AI solely as like an administrative tool. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to incorporate the human element. So like you could still have a human-led team for the songwriting, mm-hmm. but you could train the data for the singing to be based off of your voice. That way you're not recording as much and you're focused still on maintaining the quality of song.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. You get the questionnaire that comes in from the parents. You have AI just do like a run through of like, hey, here's like a typical song, and then have your artist or your producer go back and build on that. So like eliminate some of the guesswork. Do these chords make sense? Do we want it to be upbeat? You can utilize it to streamline a lot of those initial time sucks for a lot of creative folks and help give them a springboard that they can then tweak and customize along the way. So I do think there is a world in which you can have both of these things together. It's not necessarily one over the other. So I kind of disagreed a little bit when they push back and they're like, well, we want to have the human feeling. I still think there are ways you can do that by also being more efficient with your time and your costs.
Definitely. And I think I 1000% agree with you in terms of like use cases of generative AI, just because even if it's streamlining how you're outlining these songs, I think that ultimately, it actually would make your artists more efficient.
Right.
I don't think you necessarily need to cut into their profits, but I think that this would actually be really beneficial, especially if this company starts to scale at the level that they're hoping to. Also, just like helping with turnaround time on these custom animals.
Right.
It takes a lot of time to professionally produce a song, even if it is short. So I think time is like the unspoken resource. That's the resource that I think AI is literally trained to help you with. Now that we've covered the pitch, I do want to talk about what happened right after the pitch.
Yes.
So essentially, these founders brought out Damon's daughter and Damon's wife. And apparently, Damon's wife had had a custom bear made for their daughter, which we love to see. I think it was phenomenal on the producers of Shark Tank. But they like sat Damon's child in front of him with his wife and then proceeded to play the entire song. This is where I was like, I'm not sure I agree necessarily with the emotional marketing approach that this company is taking. Initial thoughts on that?
So two things stand out to me. The first is that Damon's daughter didn't really look interested in the product. Like she was just kind of sitting there. And I think their whole value proposition for this item and why it's so great is that children love it. Children can hear their mom with them. So I feel like there was a little bit of that disconnect versus if they had a child that they brought with them for the demonstration.
They're so excited.
And like visibly looked like they enjoyed it. It just felt a little bit of like a mismatch to me. Mm-hmm. When you think about coming up with a solution for your audience, it's always based off of an insight, being able to meet that need. The farmer's dog commercial is a really great example of emotion-based marketing, right?
You want the best for your dog.
Right. You want a long life for your dog. Mm-hmm. And they embody that in their product, in their commercials, in their messaging. Like it's incorporated throughout their brand through all different touch points that you have with their brand. In this instance, it's not clear what the need is that this is solving for, what insight this is based out of. And it was only really leveraged for just the demonstration purpose, which is why it feels to me manipulative a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jory?
Emotion-based marketing, you need to be very clear with the emotion that you're choosing.
Right.
The emotion that they picked, to me, felt like fear. To me, this entire demonstration was supposed to invoke this anxiety around, do my children know that I love them? And that kind of fear that like that validation is missing from your child's life. I think that the fact that they sat Damon's daughter down in front of him, like kind of reinforced this, because then the product is then positioned as a way to really reduce that feeling in your child, right? It's like, does mommy love me? Well, this bear is that physical validation that yes, they do. So because that's what I kind of interpreted the emotional marketing as, it turned me off immediately. Couple that with Damon's reaction, because he got teary.
Yeah.
This wasn't necessarily like a happy demonstration to me.
Right.
It's not how I interpreted it.
Exactly.
It interpreted as like a sad, like Damon is on the road a lot. He's very busy. This is the connection point with his daughter. And if you didn't have that, you wouldn't have that connection point.
Yeah.
For all I know, this pitch could have been designed to elicit a completely different reaction. Mm-hmm. Maybe because I'm not the target persona, John could have watched this and been like, oh, I love that. It is validating. But I think to your point, because it was so vague what the value add was and what they were trying to accomplish, it leaves it open to interpretation, and skeptical folks will always err towards pessimism. And then it becomes kind of mismatched in terms of like future buying potential.
Right. It's like not only do they have the challenge of selling this product, but it's also so dependent on instilling this sense of like inadequacy or vulnerability, where, you know, a good way to go about emotion-based marketing is like, hey, this is a problem that someone has or a pain point that they have. Here's how we solve for this, as opposed to trying to sell the actual kind of mindset you need to be in to purchase this.
Yeah. You don't need to be sad.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think maybe that is also just like the structure of the pitch and where this demonstration and story came in, because it was presented not as a solution.
But they created the problem.
They created the problem. They created that like gap.
Right.
Artificially in their demonstration. And then this was like, but you don't have to feel that way, versus being like, you don't even need to feel this emotion because we are preventing it. This is a vitamin, not a painkiller, from the beginning.
Yes.
What I did like, which may have been very sharky of me, was their tiered pricing structure, because...
Yeah, let's talk about that, the levels of love and how much they cost.
Right, because we're just doubling down on this being manipulation. But psychologically, oh my gosh, I love a tiered option. So this pricing comes with a variety of different options. You could customize a song. You can customize a song with a bear or a stuffed animal. You could get an exclusive kind of really built up audio recording. So to your point, yes, it is sort of like, how much do you love your children? Buy accordingly. But I do think that from a business perspective, giving your consumers a range of options that allows your product to fit into whatever their budget is extremely smart. So in this case, we see their lowest option is like $99. I believe the full studio recording with the stuffed animal is like $250. The stuffed animal is always like a $55 add-on. So I guess you're buying the song first, and then the stuffed animal is sort of like a secondary component. Clearly, they're selling these, right? Because we see that their sales are 1.4 million in the past 5 years. So there's clearly like a market for this. But why I love this good, better, best approach is, especially with parents, you don't want to choose the cheap option. And not everyone is going to have the budget for your most expensive offering, but always having one in between. That's why I think that if you have like that visual tiered option, people are always going to be drawn to that middle point, because it's not just where your eyes are drawn to on the screen, but it's literally that potential of, I'm not underspending, but I'm not overspending. Yeah. So this middle option is like a guaranteed purchase for me.
There's a psychology with tiered pricing for sure. You feel like you're getting the best of both worlds without having to pay the higher end.
And you're not choosing the basic option, but maybe you're not breaking the bank with a $250 song. And it's not just the pricing that brought smiles to this segment. The sharks were like kind of on board with it. And, you know, of course, Damon was going to be on board with that. He couldn't look his child in the eyes and not choose this product. But ultimately, the more sharky of our crew went out pretty early. So Mark was like, there's no scale to this. Kevin was just like, I don't think I can make money here. But we saw a team up between Daniel, Lori, and Damon, which again, in terms of distribution potential, I think is really interesting.
It's just wild to me that they got three sharks.
And honestly, I do think to a certain extent, it was because they started towards the end of their pitch to lean more into their charitable component.
Yeah.
They mentioned that 10% of their profit goes to the foster care system, that they have the ability to give free versions of this product to kids in foster care. And I think that kind of cause marketing is what won so many sharks over, because I think that's when Lori sat up and was like, okay, I'm listening. I think that Lori, of the sharks on the panel, is the one that's going to be most affected by cause marketing. I think that she really loves to lean into a cause she believes in and not just be like Kevin and think only about the money. We love a holistic queen. So ultimately, Lori, Daniel, and Damon offered $125,000 for 33 1/3% of the business. They tried to, of course, counteroffer. You always have to, just to see. They asked for 25, them being the founders. But ultimately, the sharks were willing to up their offer just a bit. So they ended up closing on $150,000 for 33 1/3%.
Was it a handshake deal?
Yeah. I mean, this is the most recent episode. Everything I found shows that this has gone through. And the net worth of Mama Sing My Song is currently, as far as we can tell, $1.4
million. Wow.
And it was a Shark Tank deal.
Yay.
Mama sing that song.
Production for today's episode was brought to you by Ari DeSarvo. Editing comes from Robert Hartwig and support from Alfred Schultz. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or wherever you subscribe to the greatest podcasts ever. That does it for me. See you next week in the tank for another bite. I want to take a break to tell you about a podcast coming to the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. It's called The Next Wave, AI and the Future of Technology. It's hosted by Matt Wolf and Nathan Lands. AI technology is transforming the way we do business, and the media landscape is currently fragmented. The Next Wave is leading the pack on AI technology and how you can apply it to growing your business. Matt and Nathan are leading AI creators and your guiding light in the AI and technology frontier. Listen to The Next Wave wherever you get your podcasts.